Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians, lurking conservatives. Good morning, non-religious Jews today. How's that? And also non-fanatical Christians and Muslims. Welcome aboard. Now I just started something I can't finish. That would be a long list of religions. I just said hello to the big three. How's that? You know, and hi to you, Mark Riley.
Hi to you, Mark Maron.
It's nice to see you, man. It's always nice to see you every morning. It's nice to see everybody. Chris, Kalo, the Costco hoes, all jacked up about something. I don't know what. He came in here, and he smacked Dan Pashman right on the booty, my friend.
Uh-oh.
He's got that weird sports spanking thing.
You know what it is? They're all juiced up from the macaroni and cheese you brought in.
I know, man. A big tray of mac and cheese. That's what I did with my afternoon. How do you like that? What's wrong with me, lonely guy? Huh? Wife goes away. I think I'll cook for the boys. What is wrong with me?
Thanks, Mom.
If that's the result of Mishnah being away, then she should go away more often.
I run a little restaurant. It's Shiz Mark. It's just for me. Yeah, Dan Pashman runs his own restaurant as well.
Yeah, we specialize in wraps.
Yeah, let's talk about who's a bad Jew and who isn't. Mr. took a class in roasting suckling pig on Friday night.
Yeah.
Friday night, Dan Pashman. Jew from New Jersey takes a class at the New School on roasting a suckling pig.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
This is the week between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the holiest week in the Jewish year. Dan Pashman's like, what do I got going? I'm going to learn how to roast a pig.
Ooh. We actually stuffed the pig with pork.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great.
Isn't that
kind of redundant?
Did you wrap bacon around it?
Yeah. And dip it in lard? Yeah. And roll it in bacon bits and then fry it in an egg batter? What are you looking at, Jesse? This isn't your show.
There are no girls here.
Jesse's Rachel Maddow's producer, helper, thing, whatever.
Hey.
Boy toy.
Oh.
Gopher. What? What? Hey, he's looking at me like he can't defend himself. Hey, we got things we got to talk about. This is one of those weird segues. We're all having a good time, and I'm going to go right into 30 Dead in a Rock. It's bad. I don't have to go that way. I don't have to do it like that. We can ease into it. We don't have to go right off. You know, we can talk about what we have on this show today. This is one of those weird junket full of guest shows, my friends.
Junket full of
guests. It is. We got Greg Behrendt, who co-wrote He's Just Not Into You. He's going to be in the studio to talk about his new book called It's Called A Breakup Because It's Broken, The Smart Girl's Breakup Buddy. Wow. I've known this guy for years. Greg Behrendt, very funny comedian, very fast talker, very clear-headed guy. I think you'll like him, Riley. Michael Imperioli is going to give us a call. He plays Christopher on The Sopranos. He's going to be with us in a little while. Lawrence Walters, dig this. We talked about Chris Wilson yesterday, the guy from NowThat'sFedUp.com got busted for obscenity, like 300 charges.
Yeah, but you know what? He got himself a really good mouthpiece.
Yeah, well, this guy's his mouthpiece is going to be with us today. Lawrence Walters, attorney for Chris Wilson, will discuss Wilson's arrest for posting obscene porn on the internet. Like, he's not one of a billion people doing that. He just happens to be the guy that was offering free membership to that porn site for pictures from Iraq from soldiers. Yeah. Actor Michael York, who's been in at least 100 movies, three of which I've seen. Mark Green, former... No, but you know who he is. You know what I mean? I'm not knocking the guy. I mean, he's obviously one of the. He's an English actor. You'll recognize him, and he's written a book, and he's going to come talk to us.
What movie was he in?
Well, he was in Logan's Run, and he was in Cabaret. He was on the last season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. He was buying a restaurant with Larry.
He was in Austin Powers.
Yeah, well, I didn't see that.
Is he Ted Danson?
No!
No, he's not the guy who was Ted Danson.
No, he's the English guy. He's not the guy who was Ted Danson? Are you retarded?
He's the guy from Austin
Powers. I mean, mentally
Powers.
Challenged, mentally challenged. I apologize. See, I just made some people spit their food out.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? He's on Austin Powers?
He was the guy who was like the guy back at the base, Q. He was like the one who came up on the TV screen.
Okay,
in the car.
Okay. And Mark Green will be here later. Now, Oh, come on. It's my last month.
That's a good
segue. Hey, well, here we go.
Rock.
Here we go.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you want to do that? Here we go. All right. Why are we losing? How we're losing, Mark Riley? How are we losing in Iraq? Let's start with politics. Bush and company have been giving us the, that'd be the neocon death cult for some of you, have been giving us a hard sell that a political solution could ease the violence in Iraq. It is the centerpiece of Bush's Iraq policy at this moment. Now, here's the problem with that. With the Iraqi constitutional referendum being voted on this Saturday, the idea that any political progress can slow the intensity of the insurgency is diminishing.
Well, yeah, and see, the Iraqis are starting to realize that one has nothing to do with the other.
Yeah.
The likelihood is the constitutional referendum will pass this weekend. Doesn't mean the insurgency is going to stop one bit in intensity. Not one bit.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, as we're seeing now, we're getting reports this morning.
Yeah.
Two car bombs killed dozens of Iraqis.
Yeah.
One in Baghdad, one in Tal Afar, which is in the northwest near Syria. America had the allies, I guess, the coalition, had a big offensive there back in June. Apparently, they didn't get everybody.
Well, it seems like the real problem is the Sunni minority is likely to be disenfranchised even more than they already are. Even if the Constitution is decided upon, it won't suit them, and they are the bulk of the insurgency. I mean, I'm not saying that all Sunnis are members of the insurgency, but the insurgency is comprised of radical Sunnis. Now, the Constitution may, in effect, solidify a divide between Sunnis and the Shiite Kurd majority. So that means, in some respects, it will guarantee the civil war will go on. The insurgency will be continually pissed off.
Well, the Sunnis' problem with the Constitution can be summed up in two words: regional autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
The Constitution gives it to the Kurds in the north and the Shiites in the south. Now, the Shiites, of course, are sitting on all the oil that's in Iraq. And the Sunnis now argue that if you give the Kurds on the north autonomy and the Shiites in the south autonomy, they will both spin off from Iraq. And they'll be left with nothing.
They'll be left with nothing, and there's a fear that they will be restricted in terms of jobs they can get in the public sector if they were Ba'ath Party members. As you said, the oil has been cut off. And other complaints on behalf of many Iraqis, not just the Sunnis, is the inability for the government to provide basic needs like security, clean drinking water, electricity, jobs, which brings us to the next failure, if we could, infrastructure rebuilding. You want to know why plans for an air-conditioned, state-of-the-art Iraqi army barracks in Iraq with... And I said Iraqi in Iraq because it is for Iraqi soldiers built by U.S. funds. It's supposed to have basketball courts, a movie theater, classrooms, officers club, and now it's down to one barracks. Is that the bottom line is the U.S. government is running out of money to fund reconstruction projects in Iraq.
All right. Now let's take that, bookmark that. The U.S. government is running out of money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. On the other hand, just yesterday, arrest warrants have been issued for up to 27 people, including the former defense minister under the government of Iyad Alawi.
Billions of bucks.
$1 billion
yep.
is missing, folks.
Yep.
So America's running out of money on the one hand, and remember that Alawi was a U.S.-backed government.
Yep.
27 of his minions are now on the lam because, you know, there have been arrest warrants issued for them.
They robbed the kitty, obviously. Well, here's in the big, this is the interesting problem is that although the U.S. Contractors and the U.S. government wants to rebuild this infrastructure, the primary problem is security.
Yep.
Apparently, what about 25% of every reconstruction dollar is going into security, and that means protecting the site and protecting the workers on the site, whether they're Iraqi or Americans. I mean, the reconstruction projects have either been scaled back or stopped entirely because the overhead, not even overhead, just the amount, it triples the cost of the project itself just to protect the people on the site.
Well, yeah, and you know, if you're a contractor who doesn't live in the area where the work is being done,
mm-hmm.
and you got to travel to that area, you're taking your life in your hands. So what happens? The contractors don't go. They don't keep track of where the money's going. They don't know exactly what progress, if any, is being made on these projects.
And the smaller projects, and I don't want to deny the fact that some work has been done. You know, there has out of 200 or 2,800 projects, about 1,700 have been finished, like schools, police stations, hospitals, bridges, and roads. Those are all good things. But the big projects are the ones that seem to be more prone to sabotage by the insurgency. Big projects like water and sewage plants that are not getting done and may not get done. The promise of employment and infrastructure rebuilding is completely diminishing. Unemployment is around 50%. And this is after, you know, they promised like 50,000 jobs to Iraqis in these rebuilding efforts. So if this craps out, Riley, that means you're going to have more poor people. You're going to have more people that are disenfranchised. Franchise, you're going to have more people who are pissed off, which means more people that might be willing to join up with the insurgency, even if they're not, you know, radical or angry Sunnis.
And don't think for a minute that people aren't saying, wait a minute, the United States and its partners backed a government that allegedly robbed $1 billion so that people can't have sewage treatment, so they can't have water. Now, in fairness, this $1 billion is supposed to be for military procurement, but that hasn't worked either.
Yeah. See, this is the big problem is that even, you know, there's just reports out now that even if the Constitution passes, there's absolutely no guarantee that that will stop the insurgency. It could even inflame it more. And this is, you know, denies the centerpiece of Bush's recent policy on Iraq. As you said yesterday, Carl Levin wrote an op-ed in the New York Times saying that if this Constitution crafts out, it's time to really start thinking about a withdrawal plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's Senator Carl Levin of Michigan. And, you know, he is one of the more influential Democrats in the upper house. And, you know, Mark, it was interesting to see a Kurdish official describe this whole process as America's fast food or trying to make hamburgers real quick. They feel pressured by the U.S. to meet these deadlines where they think, you know, democracy should take a little bit more time, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Good news from the Christian Coalition coming up in just a couple of minutes at 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is Lawton Smalls, Morning Sedition's Planet Bush Bureau Chief. You know why I'm praying for you? Because you're listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Twenty-one past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. We have Greg Behrendt out here just a few minutes. Very funny guy, author of "It's Called a Breakup Because It's Broken," and he's also the co-author of what's the other thing called? You might be. What is it?
He's just not that into you.
He's just not that into you. Wow, I'm pop culturally deficient.
I'm actually reading that breakup book.
Yeah, are you?
Yeah.
How's that going for
pretty
you?
Pretty good.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah.
It helps. Yeah, it does. It helps you be alone and realize why you might have broken up with somebody again.
Good advice.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Well, how's that working for you? I noticed in the last couple of days you've been sort of full of the beans, you know, kind of edgy and, you know, like, you know, randomly hurting my feelings and stuff like that.
Is that normal?
All right, let's. Okay,
well, yeah, I guess I'm now taking out what I used to do to Jackie on you.
Well, thanks. I'm glad that you've made me your doormat. I'm glad that I was available on a codependent level
like
for you.
You've
to do
never
that.
Done that to me.
What are you talking about? I'm nothing but nice to you. All right, all right. Yeah, I'm nothing. I brought you macaroni and cheese to help you get fatter, and you know, I've supported all your endeavors. You know, I've helped you out. I don't know. You know what? This is going nowhere. Look. The world is ending, and I don't see any reason why that should be a bad thing. Yes, well, I mean, Pat Robertson, the popular Crystal Fascist Zombie Brigade leader, said because of all the disasters lately, like this is a tough call, because of all the disasters lately, we might be, I'm quote unquote, might be in the end times described in the Bible. I like that he said might, because the old the world is ending pitch can be embarrassing if it doesn't end. You know what I mean? So he's hedging his bets a little bit. So it might be ending. I got a feeling, and he's feeling that maybe the second coming is upon us. So he says might, and I like that. This should be enough to, I think, scare a few million people to send some money to him, but not to, it's not as extreme as it used to be when they go, it's definitely ending.
Well, he's old, and you know, he's lived through a few of those, the world is ending things before, and it hasn't happened.
That's right.
So now he hedges his bets. It's just experience has taught him.
I have always wondered about those people. Like, there was that woman out there in the Midwest somewhere that they actually built an entire underground bunker. What was her name? Mary, was it Prophet? I can't remember her name, but they built an underground bunker, an entire underground facility for the end, you know, for Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't happen. And I just wonder, you know, what the conversation with the congregation was after that. So like, all right, so mushroom farming, anybody? We can do that. We can rent a space out. But what is interesting now is that if Jesus is coming back soon, maybe he could save Robertson's old organization. The Christian Coalition is on the verge of going under. Apparently, the group's annual revenue has shrunk from $26 million at its peak in '96 to about $1.3 million in 2004, and most of that is owed in debts. It has suffered from infighting, ineffective leadership. And now you got to remember, as many of you do, that this was a powerful rallying organization that helped the Republicans gain Congress in, what was it, 94, right?
94,
right?
Yeah.
I think that the failing of the Christian Coalition at this point in time should give us some hope. The organizations, all of these organizations eventually tend to eat themselves when they don't have a demon Democrat to fight against. Now, you were talking about that the other day. That was an interesting thing that we didn't get really, really didn't get into. In the process of this nomination of Harriet Myers, that what you get is you get these radical Christians who really want to fight.
Yeah.
And if they don't have a fight,
they got nothing.
Yes. And they feel marginalized and powerless.
Yeah.
And I think this is somewhat of what happened to the Christian Coalition, is that it became more ineffective. But I think the real message here is that there's also some evidence that even when the coalition, the Christian Coalition, was at its most powerful, they just didn't have as many members as they claimed. In 1995, the Christian Coalition claimed that it had like 1.7 million members. But a U.S. postal data for the fall of that year shows it only mailed about 310,296 copies of Christian American Magazine. And that goes out to people who pay like $15 a month. So that's not much money. So they were lying. And I think that that's something we should realize now, is that the numbers that these organizations claim may not be true. They might not have the momentum socially that they say they have. And they, you know, they're just a lot of wind, a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Well, you want to hear some true numbers?
Yeah.
Let's hear some true numbers. $300,000. That's how much the coalition apparently or reportedly paid to settle a discrimination lawsuit by some of its black employees. Let's talk about $76,546. That's how much they owe in back rent.
Yeah.
Capitol Hill. I mean, there are numbers here. The problem is that this organization, which is supposed to promote Christian piety, apparently stiffed an awful lot of people.
Yeah, and these are corrupt people. There's a head of the Christian Coalition up in Oregon is right now under investigation. He's been accused of having sex with a few members of his family.
No.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sex?
Sure.
Family?
Oh, yeah. You know, they are not what they seem, and certainly they are evil bastards. I mean, did you ever see that movie, The Eyes of Tammy Faye Baker?
No.
It's a documentary. It is pretty endearing and interesting how Jim and Tammy were actually pushed out by Jerry Falwell in a vile fashion from the Moral Majority, which was what they started. A lot of these guys, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, they all owe their careers in some ways to Jim and Tammy, because they were real innovators in Christian broadcasting, and they got the short end of the stick. They got pushed out.
Well, but the other part was, I mean, you know, Baker was into some short end of the stick stuff, too.
I know he overextended, but it did create them into
in more ways than one.
Yeah, it made them sympathetic characters in some weird way.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not. Obviously they're not. But the Christian Coalition is going down. That's a happy and
good
hopeful
news.
Day. Yeah. It's 27 past the hour. We'll have Greg Barrett in here in just a second. So stay with us. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. For fans of the show, you people that are in the New York area, but you know, people fly in from all over the country to see us do this live. We'll be broadcasting from Restaurant Florent in New York's Meatpacking District this Friday morning. We'll have special guests, free coffee, prizes, your favorite comedy. We're going to have Lawton Smalls, you know, the MILF Cardinal. MILF Cardinal Milfington will be there. So come on down to Restaurant Florent on Gansevoort Street in the Meatpacking District this Friday and enjoy. You can come and touch Pops Riley.
Oh, yeah, you can.
Here we go. Let's do this. 27 Republican senators, almost half of. You know what? I forgot that I have another bit to do here. I didn't forget it. It's just sometimes I get excited to share the news, Dan. And if you're going to get in my head with that voice of yours, you might as well just do it on the air. You know why? Because this is Chaos Central, my friend.
Mark, you forgot to do the I-news.
Okay, here we go. That's it, man. So sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have the I-news 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. All right, here we go. All right, now I miss Brendan. Don't you? Remember when Brendan was here?
Who?
You're doing a great job, Dan, and John Crimmins doing. Everyone's doing a great job, but you know Brendan is.
Who?
He's probably not even thinking about us a little bit. You know what I mean? He's probably just having some Gatorade, maybe some protein drink to continue whatever it is one does.
Like, I really think he doesn't
protein
like us,
drink.
Like, at all.
If it's, no, you know, it's weird, because, you know, no calls, no nothing. Hey, how are you? I got married, it went well.
Yeah, the pictures.
Just, no. It's just work to him. Just work to him. All right, here we go. From ABC News, some rabbis criticize new Madonna song. Translation, Papa don't fetch. From Associated Press, Dallas minister seeks prayers for Harriet Myers. Translation, turns out Harriet Myers' nomination does have a prayer. All right, here we go. Maybe one more. Oh, woohoo. All right. Dallas minister seeks prayers for Harriet Myers. Translation, let us bow our heads in shame. Nothing, a little bit. All right. From CNN International, Germany gets first woman chancellor. Translation, Chickskrieg. Wait. Germany gets first woman chancellor. See, sometimes I put it in the machine twice because I get two things out of it. Germany gets first woman chancellor, translation. Germany gets first woman chancellor. Hogan. Like it was Hogan's fault from that.
Like a dead silence.
Thanks for punching that. You know what I mean? Because that wasn't clear to me when the actual silence happens.
Riley didn't even bother.
Yeah, I know. That's good news. It was probably by the fault of the impression. Or maybe you did something to sabotage that joke, Chris. All right, here we go. Can I read one more? I'll just do it. Germany gets first woman chancellor. Translation, Germany to cut chancellor's salary 30%. All right, where are we at? We got Greg Barron coming up. Greg Barron co-authored He's Just Not That Into You. He's got a new book. He's also a funny comedian I've known for half my life, it feels like. So can I start the story again? Yes, we can. 27 Republican senators, that's almost half of Bush's party, have publicly expressed doubts about Harriet Myers. It is now the Republicans, Riley, who are talking about a thorough nomination process. These are the guys that are like, let's get it done. Let's rush it through. Let's make this happen. All of a sudden, they're like, wait a minute. We need more information. Maybe some records, some papers, and there aren't even any of those.
Well, you know, two Republicans on the Judiciary Committee, Brownback and Coburn, have already spoken very negatively about Harriet Myers. If those two say no, along with the Democrats on the Judiciary Committee, she goes down in committee.
Let's talk about Senator Sam Brownback, one of the great Christo-fascist theocrats in the Senate, says, quote, I've said in the past that I would like a nominee with a proven track record on important issues to all Americans and whose judicial philosophy is well-formed. I am not yet confident that Ms. Myers has a proven track record, and I look forward to having these questions answered. So these guys are going to be the ones doing the grilling. That's going to be a change.
Well, it's not just going to be those guys. Liddy Dole, all right, who was laudatory about Bush's choice of John Roberts, has been less than laudatory about Harriet Myers, meaning, of course, that she doesn't even have the women in the Senate on her side.
So what does this mean, Riley? I know the Democrats are just sort of sitting there. I know Harriet Reid has come out in support of Harriet Reid. Senator Harriet Reid is supporting a nomination of Harry Myers for Supreme Court nominee. Well, that's interesting. What is his angle on that then? Is there what we were talking about before? Is there some sentiment on the side of the Democrats that she might, let's just do it because it's the lesser of two evils or three evils or the potential evil of another nominee? Is that the basic reasoning on behalf of whatever Democrats might be supporting this woman?
I'm not sure that Harry Myers,
see?
Harry Reid, if you asked him today, would say he supports it. What he said was she deserves being considered. Now, if it gets to the point that it looks like this thing is getting steamroll away from her nomination, watch for Harry Reid to say, well, I said she should be considered. We considered her. I'm not voting for her.
Okay. All right. So that means that we get another nominee, probably a more radical but competent judge.
I don't know if we're going to get a more radical judge, because then you risk the filibuster.
Right.
Then you risk the possibility that Democrats are going to be able to dominate media coverage, certainly of the Supreme Court, for the rest of the year.
Okay, so you're saying that if the Democrats fight and if these Republicans turn her down, there is the outside chance that we will get a moderate, which is the best we can hope for?
Well, the moderate is the best we can hope for. I have a dark horse in mind. I mentioned this woman's name along with Harriet Meyer's name a couple of weeks back, mm-hmm. and I have a feeling that that may be the person that Bush names if Harriet Meyer goes down. Now, we don't know yet whether the president, who's a very stubborn guy when it comes to this sort of thing, whether he would pull her nomination, whether she might get to a point where it's too much hassle. You know, she's been making the rounds of the Senate for the last 2 weeks now under, yeah. You know, under the radar, and she hasn't been getting a great reception. Maybe she'll look at this herself and say, you know what, it's not worth it. Let me let the president off the hook. I'll withdraw my name.
Well, I'll tell you, it's certainly indicative of the stink that is on this administration, given that they're, we're expecting indictments any day now on the plane gate, on the leak of the CIA operative's name. In the, you know, that could be as many as three or four people within this administration. We know that that Bill Frist is under investigation. We know that this is a troubled administration, and a lot of these guys are now seeing their opportunity to stand up for who they are and make their and take their shots.
Well, whenever there is a leadership vacuum in a political situation, you're going to have people stepping in. You've got Frist neutralized in the Senate. You've got DeLay neutralized in the House. You've got Rove neutralized in the executive branch. Who does George W. Bush really have? James Dobson is not going to get this woman confirmed.
That's right. And I don't know who he's got anymore.
That's all he's got.
Yeah, it's,
he's got him and Laura.
Well, him and Laura, and if they shut down Harriet Myers, they can all go back to Texas together and say, I tried.
Look at some tumbleweeds for a while.
Well, clean them up. That's what he likes to do. He likes to pull them off the fence. In just a minute, we're going to talk to Greg Barron, who is the co-author of He's Just Not That Into You. He's got a new book. I don't know when this guy became the maven of women's advice, but he's going to have to fill me in because I don't think I'm that good at it. I'd like to know.
I know I'm not that good
at it. 42 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition.
It's just to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Forty-seven past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo,
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I hear rumors that boy genius John Crimmings has stashed another Kringle from Wisconsin, so that should be coming out momentarily.
None
am I
for
right?
You, pal.
Yeah, Pashman's put this stifle on my sugar intake so I don't freak out. Sometimes it's hard to admit that the person you're dating is just not that into you. God, I have not dated in a million years. I dated when I was married the first time, but not. But our next guest wrote it. It's so horrible
Such
for me to
candor.
Say. It's so horrible. I'm much better now. I've worked it all out. But our next guest wrote a best-selling book, Helping Women Come to Grips with Just That Situation. He's a stand-up comedian who also worked as a consultant on sex in and the city. His latest book is called, it's called A Breakup Because It's Broken, The Smart Girl's Breakup Buddy. It's just been released. Good morning, Greg Barron, my friend.
Hello, buddy. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm glad you could make some time to do this. You were like you're the new the chick guru.
What I call myself, actually.
How did that happen?
So you I backed into it, right? I made a comment at lunch at Sex and the City to a girl about her relationship, and one of the other girls said, "I think that's a book." And I'm like, "He's just not that into a book. Maybe a pamphlet, maybe." That you would hand out at a bar, and since she said, "No, it's a book," and Liz DiCillo was her name, and then we sat down and wrote this book, and like for fun, like literally, like I'm like, this will be like a book that'll be at Urban Outfitters and no one will buy it, and I'll be able to tell my friends I wrote this pink and green book, and no big deal.
It was huge.
And I'll go back to performing at the Baltimore Improv for 12 people, you know.
But how many do you get now? 15, 20?
What's that, at the club?
Yeah,
almost 35 people will show up. 35 people.
No, it's a very exciting thing, and I'm happy for your success because I've known you for years, and in the comic community, it's weird when someone gets successful. Usually, a bunch of comics are like, screw that guy, he sucks. But nobody said that about Greg. They're all very happy because you're a very nice guy, and you deserve all the success you're getting.
Thank you.
What I want to know is how the hell do you know this stuff? Who the hell are you to know this about?
Well, that's it. I'm not. I say in the books, I'm just a dude. I don't. All I have is my perspective. That's all the books are. Just like me going, well, if a guy's not calling you, I mean, I'm not a scientist, but he doesn't like you. Doesn't that make sense? Well, you know, yeah, like that right. It was all those things that like sure. things that I've done, things yeah. that you probably have done, things that you've done, also, Mark, like things
many years ago.
Yeah, yeah, like stuff like you know, like if you just suddenly decide, you know, yeah, I'm tired, man. I'm not going to go out with you tonight, or I'm, you know, you get too tired. Like it's like they're just excuses. So that sure. was how that kind of came about.
Now this new book, the Breakup Because It's Broken yeah. book, is a little different. It seems like a bigger book.
Yeah, it's got more pages and a few more pictures.
Yeah, and
it's even pinker than the last one. It's really gone girly.
But this is all. It's you and your wife wrote this book, and she yeah. couldn't be here today. She with the how many
She's
kids you got
kids
now?
Two.
You got two little girls. Another one. How old's the second one?
6 months.
I missed something.
Yeah, no, it's all right.
Okay.
True and Mighty are their names.
True and Mighty.
True and Mighty.
Nice names.
Yeah.
But this is a lot of Dear Greg stuff. Are these real letters, dude?
Yeah, some of them are, and some of them are ones that we crafted ourselves out, uh-huh. you know, or took two letters put together. But it's basically that. A breakup was the most significant thing that ever happened to me. Like, I went through a breakup that was so soul-crushing, as you know, like, ended up getting sober and all that out of it. And
yeah.
That was so. And then I was trying to put that experience in that book saying, you can get crushed and actually turn it around and turn
sure.
it for good as opposed to, like, you know, sitting it for years and be
mad. As opposed to turn it into contempt and make the other sex pay
yeah.
forever?
Yeah, not everyone has to be a stand-up.
Wow, is that the only... Are those the only two alternatives? I got to ask you, Greg, because I get a sense that a lot of certainly what the first book talks about is a direct result of guys just not having the stones to tell women that, where their relationship is.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And then my thing is, why are we waiting for him to make a decision? Why don't you bolt then? And then he'll make a decision. Because yeah. when I met Amira, I wasn't that guy. Like, I was like, I have a plan. I'm in. Whatever you need. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
I'm ready to at least start talking about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's really ultimately true. And a guy will stay in a relationship for a long time because there's certain comforts he enjoys while scoping the field.
Well, that, yeah, well, I certainly know
comforts.
That to be true.
I wonder what kind of comforts we're talking about.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people stay in relationships because it's what you have. You know, it's working at the time.
Yep.
It may not be based in
you
love.
You don't know that there's something better, so you think this is just how it is.
I tell you, I believe in love. I believe in falling in love, and mm-hmm. I believe that love can be maintained if you're honest with the person.
Totally, and I also think that there's more than love to make a relationship work. You can love somebody, but not be on the same page.
I find that when you're really in love, that you know, usually the fights are a lot deeper and harder and more
yep.
intense,
yep.
and that the chaos around that love, especially if you're insecure, which makes it really exciting.
Oh my God, it's so true. Somebody said, yeah, no, that's completely true. I mean, I'm no picnic to live with, but I found somebody that, like, you know, I was willing to, like, okay, I'm going to work on my stuff,
yeah.
you know, like that kind of thing. Somebody said to me the other day, you know, a bird and a fish can fall in love, but where are they going to live?
Yeah.
Where are they going to live? You know what I mean? So you got to sort of figure out what you're doing.
Here's how I say I love you to my wife. Usually I start it with, you don't love me.
Okay. And looking for approval.
Exactly.
Huh?
That's what you say to crowds sometimes.
I've gotten better. I'm a new man.
Yeah,
know?
I know.
Now
I have watched you. I've known you mm-hmm. for a long time. Mm-hmm. You are a person interested in growth.
Yes, I am.
So you really have, like, you've made some changes.
You cannot go through the type of discomfort that I go through on a day-to-day basis, and it's self-generating discomfort
yeah.
without eventually saying, hey, this is unnecessary.
That's exactly right. Ultimately, that's what
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of what you're trying to say in the breakup book. It's like, you don't have to stay stuck in this forever, man. You really
yeah.
don't. You just need to, like, take a couple steps and get out of it. It's very much, it's like drying out. You know,
what
some relationships you get addicted to.
That's for sure. That is absolutely for sure. Hey, Chris, do you have any questions for Greg? Chris seems to break up with everybody, given a matter of time.
I do have a tendency of breaking up with girlfriends time after time, and then getting back with them.
So, yeah, right. That's called dumper's remorse.
Okay.
You're like, oh man, I am lonely. I don't want to spend this Sunday. Hey, what are you doing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how do I stop doing that?
I don't know. I guess you just wait till you meet somebody that you dig, you know? I mean, you shouldn't. Here's the thing.
My shrink said something different.
Oh.
Well,
let's compare notes. What did he say?
He said that I haven't found the right person and that
I think that's what Greg
said.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Also, yeah.
Different wording.
You know what the thing is, though, what you're doing, ultimately, and yeah. I don't know you, so this is going to sound harsh, but it's kind of selfish to the other person, because they're probably thinking you're psyched to get back together. And
imagine
you're just
that.
Really, and you're just looking for, like, a warm blanket.
Wow, yeah. Imagine that. You're selfish. Did you know that, Chris?
I did, actually. Thank you.
See, I've been awesome. Real, real lucky in my life. Yeah. I've had people, you know, that I had as sex partners. And yeah. There was never anything about that. And, you know, I mean, it was never about a relationship. Every now and then you call up, hey, you want to get together? Fine.
There's nothing wrong with that either. I think just as long as it's on the table, I think all we're trying to say is, like, just be honest about it. Just go, like, this is what this is. And, you know, a
but
lot
is
of
that
times,
ever really real, though? I mean, I have had that in my life, Greg, and I'm sorry to interrupt
no,
you.
No, no, no.
Where you think that it's legit and everything's on the table, but all of a sudden, you know, you're having one of your little sessions, and they're like, where are you going?
That's totally true. And that's because, you know what, people don't. Sex is still intimate. There's
yes,
just no
yeah.
way around it. There's
yes.
just no way around it. It's still intimate. And there's always one person in that combination that's hoping for something better,
right.
hoping that it'll turn around. Doesn't mean that it's a guy or the girl. It can go both ways.
Yeah, true.
Because definitely I was in a relationship. The one that spurred this book was, you know, the person was clear, this is just going to be sexual. And I'm like, well, no, we're going to have a relationship, and I'm actually going to start making a mixtape now. Because that's who I am. I'm in love with you, and you have another boyfriend now. And you're living in a hotel with him, and I'm calling.
That's
tragic.
That's a
really
crazy
is.
Story in that book. I can't believe the woman moved 3,000 miles away, and you still thought that...
Called her, yeah. Well, because the thing was I had had tequila, and when you have... Because during the day, you're so good, and then you have tequila, and you have information that has to get to them now.
And a really great story in the book is that the guy who we called at the hotel, the reception guy,
Paramount.
Yeah, he said, "Do you really want to make this call?"
That's right. He said, "Are you sure you want to make?" I was so drunk, I called the Paramount Hotel. The girl that I liked was living there with a guy, and they're waiting to move into an apartment.
Yeah.
And but I figured we still had hope. And I can't even talk at this point. Like, I'm so hammered, I should have just barked. And the guy said, "Are you sure you want to make this call?" And I didn't. Like, I hung up. Like, that was like my moment of clarity. Like, I'm like, no, man, I don't want to be that guy. I've already been that guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and then I was thinking that would be awesome to have on the, you know, if you had that guy on your phone all the time. Like, if you're going through a birth, like 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., just a guy to reroute you to pizza.
But doesn't that obsession, I mean, I have ruined relationships, man. When I was younger, I was completely obsessed, completely insecure, completely, not stalkery, but just dominating and angry and possessive. I feel that we're not done with Greg yet. We have to keep him for a couple more minutes, you know? Because I want to talk about, you bring something up about the Seven Commandments. After a breakup, I want to get into that.
Okay.
And I would like to, I would like to get into obsession a little bit.
I love that.
Yeah, it's because that's a big problem. Is a lot of times love is just need all dolled up, isn't it?
It's lust and obsession at the same time. Yeah. And then, but it also feels very movie-like. So you want to do movie things like stand on someone's lawn or that boombox.
Oh, I've
in real life, that guy gets arrested because it's weird and nobody likes you. Stop
yeah.
it.
Yeah, but it's also very vulnerable. And yeah, how many times you can do that? I really killed that guy. I killed that guy and me. Years ago, the romantic, you know, when I met the woman I'm married to now, who I'm deeply in love with, it was not a courting, it was a grilling. You know, it's like, what do you want? What's really going on here? Do you love me? I don't believe you love me. Prove to me that you love me. We're going to talk more to Greg Barrett. He's the author of He's Just Not That Into You, and now the new book. It's called The Breakup Because It's Broken in just a few minutes, 57 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Six past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo.
We're sitting here with Greg Barrett, the author, co-author of He's Just Not That Into You, and now co-author of It's Called a Breakup Because It's Broken. We're going to be taking some calls for him because we're having fun. Is that okay, my progressive friends, my liberal friends, my lurking conservative angry friends? Is it okay if we have a fun Tuesday morning here on Morning Sedition?
Hey, liberals have relationships.
That's what I hear. 866-303-2270. If you have questions about breaking up, up. It's advice time here on Morning Sedition.
That's right.
Let's do a couple of news stories before we get into that. What news stories do you want to do, Riley? How about this? We're talking about Iraq. We have the Constitution is going to be voted on Saturday.
Yeah.
Bush and company have been giving us the hard sell that a political solution could ease the violence in Iraq. It is the centerpiece of the Bush administration's Iraq policy at the moment. But what that doesn't take into mind is that no matter what this Constitution says, the Sunnis are going to be marginalized. And if the Sunnis are marginalized, there's a real good chance that the insurgency will continue forever.
Well, it's certainly for the foreseeable future, which means American troops are going to have to be there for the foreseeable future. And that is a problem. It is a political problem for the Bush administration. It's one that they have not yet figured out how to deal with.
Yeah, and also along those lines is that there's much trouble in terms of rebuilding the infrastructure in Iraq. A lot of money that was coming from the U.S. is drying up, and a lot of the contracting jobs are also being stopped or compromised because of security issues. Out of every dollar spent in Iraq on reconstruction, about a quarter goes into keeping the site safe, keeping the contractors' employees safe, keeping people from being killed, and that is in, you know, elevating the cost of any reconstruction project, you know, tripling it.
Well, yeah, and you also have the specter of arrest warrants being issued for 27 members of Iyad Alawi's government. Now, Iyad Alawi was essentially installed by the U.S. They are trying to find that $1 billion that's been ripped off.
And here's something that's frightening that we haven't talked about, Riley, is that you get a city like the third largest city in Iraq, Basra. The police there are completely fractioned. There is actually a militia force within the police force called the Jamaat. And this is about 200 to 300 police officers who are basically running the city, and they are deciding what the law is, how it is, and what they want it to be. They are, you know, this is a part of a problem. These are Sunnis. These are people who are out. They're not Sunnis. I mean, they're Shiites, and they're out there killing Sunni politicians, kidnapping people, terrorizing the town, and basically aligning themselves with militias, you know, Muqtada al-Sadr's militia, and some other religious factions from the theocratic dominating government in Iran, and they are running a huge city in Iraq. So this is another problem that is not discussed.
Well, yeah, it's a big problem. It's been under the radar largely because the British have been the ones that have had, you know, taken up the security of Basra, and, you know, they tried to free these guys from a police station that was controlled by that same group of militias, and it created a riot. They had 5,000 people out in the street. Next thing you know, they're throwing stuff. People are getting hurt. And the British are blaming the Iranians for this, and America says nothing. It's amazing.
So look, you know, the Sunnis and the Shias are probably always going to be, you know, battling with each other, certainly in modern Iraq, just like men and women battle with each other.
Yeah. What a segue.
Well, it's so true. It's so true.
We are here with Greg Behrendt, whose new book, it's called The Breakup Because It's Broken. We are taking calls. 866-303-2270 is our number. If you have relationship related questions, we'd love to hear from you. Now, as I was saying, I was never really a stalker. I would call it more a persistent charm offensive.
Yeah.
Do stalkers ever call themselves stalkers?
I love that.
I don't know. So I think
they're fans.
There you go.
Love what you do.
Yeah, I just love your work. Yeah. I love the work you're doing in your pants.
But I have, like, I think I have annoyed women into going out with me.
There's a lot of different ways to get women to go out with you, mm-hmm. But yeah, probably. But you know, you're a good looking guy and you're funny and you know, you got a lot on the ball.
Yeah,
you just bring a lot to the table.
You just keep working it. So let's talk about the seven commandments of what is that? Is it a post breakup seven commandments?
Yeah, this is like we had the books divided into two halves, just the breakup, and then we did this fascinating thing. We took the word makeover and we combined it with break, and we call it a breakover.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We got in the shop and welded those two together.
That's very clever.
Yeah, basically, it's just a seven-step program to like get away from, you know, from this person that you're with and you need to disengage from. You know, like immediately, we took the survey. 100% of people said, "I wish I'd just gotten away from them. I just wish I hadn't stayed engaged, tried to be friends, all that kind of stuff that everybody tries to do to like sort of ease off." It's like trying to dry out in a bar.
It went on for years. When I was in love with a woman in college and she broke up with me, and she went on to become a lesbian for a while, and I don't think that was me. I think that was already brewing.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is I could not let it go for like 10 years.
Yeah, and it's
actually,
and you don't want to carry that around. So we just say get away from this, like, you know, 60 days right out the top. no contact at all. We call it a he-tox.
Okay.
He-tox.
How about that? Yeah, that's recording clever. Phrases left and right. I can't stop.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, I didn't mean to alienate you on the break. I mean, if you want to pipe in or chime in or whatever it is that you need to do, you feel free to do it because Greg is here for you and you are in the middle of reading this book.
Yeah. Thanks. And actually, I can't do that because we share a dog.
Who?
My girlfriend and I. So I can't not see her for 60 days.
I think that, yeah, but you can keep the conversation to a minimum. Thanks for the dog. And then you walk away. Here's the dog back. Thanks for the dog. Thanks for taking care of the dog. Here's the dog's bag. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to engage. Like, people use every sort of excuse to engage.
Yeah.
But we also say, get yourself a breakup buddy, you know, which is sort of like having a sponsor, someone that, like, you know, can actually take the dog back and forth between the two of you so you don't have to. There are ways to not be in contact with people. You just have to decide whether you want to do it or not.
Who's got the dog right now, Chris?
I do. I have the dog for 6 days a week, and she has the dog for one day.
That sounds good.
You know what you do? Christmas is coming up. Buy her a dog.
There you go.
Hey, guess what? Here's your new dog.
Here's your dog. Have a nice day.
Start fresh.
She likes it one day a week.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems to me that we always play games with ourselves of how are we going to get back into proximity with them.
Right. Like, we do a little premeditated run-in, and, you know, oh, I just happened to be at this coffee shop again. That's weird. Yeah. Why are you doing in my shower? I used to hang out here. Where's my shower? So I wish you weren't hanging out in my shower.
Oh, man. So 866-303-2270. I guess some progressives just don't have the same problems we have. This is not important to them. They're wondering why we're not.
They want to know, yeah.
Yeah, they're like, why aren't they hating Bush now?
We hate him.
Yeah.
We're hating him. We're hating him. The other day he had his press conference and knocked out my appearance on the Today Show. I continued to hate him.
Oh, my God.
On the West Coast.
For very personal reasons.
Yeah, you can hate him for a lot of different reasons.
So you did the Today Show three times?
Three times last week,
So you're going to sell a few books?
We might sell a few books, yeah.
Now when you do stand-up now, who comes?
Women.
I'm
like 80% women.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Do you do a show prepared for them?
No, I just do. I still do the same stand-up. In fact, I have a DVD coming out.
Yeah?
In November.
And do they respond to that? Do they get disappointed that you don't?
No. I loop it. I talk a little bit. I talk about being on Oprah a little bit. I sort of, because I did this whole set for a while called Being Uncool, which is about being a parent and all that kind of stuff. I've always talked about the relationship you have with yourself.
Yeah.
And so whatever you're doing, you have a relationship with yourself. And so I feel like the same with the books. And I loop it in a little bit. And now there's some relationship coming in because I'm enjoying telling the relationship stuff.
Yeah.
I like talking about freaking out in relationships.
Do you talk about, like, do you do a bit at the end of your stand-up and take questions?
I don't take questions at the end of my stand-up. No, I'm not Jamie Kennedy. But
what the hell
does he take questions?
What would he take questions about?
I don't
know.
Sawyer told me he took questions. He would about his show, I guess. But I don't.
Advice guy.
But I will go do, like, I'll go to a college and do a reading of the book. I have a specific show for the book, but I just do that at colleges. But when I go do stand-up, it's just like, you know, I go do stand-up.
Yeah. I got a question.
Yeah.
When you're doing stand-up, mm-hmm. and you look out in the audience,
mm-hmm.
and you see that one person that's got stalker written all over them, what do you do? I mean, if you see somebody you know ahead of time is just going to follow you out of the place, and you got to have, I mean, with the kind of success you're having, you got to have people that kind of want to Velcro themselves.
You know what? I actually do. I'll meet people after. Like, I'll sign books. Like, I'll say, if you brought a book, I'll sign it. I'll stand afterwards and, you know, I took the Dane Cook lesson. You know, you meet people. You hang out.
The Dane Cook lesson.
Yeah.
Oh, man. See, that's it. You know,
the whole time you and I were being cynical going, I would never sell anything after a show. I'm not even going to meet people. Dane Cook was getting email addresses.
And Dane Cook also, famous now for appropriating some of our friends' material.
Uh-oh.
But I don't want to gossip on the air.
No,
but nonetheless... Dan Cook is a noisemaker, and he's become very successful with a lot of people because people are entertained by loud things.
They enjoy the loud.
Yes, and also, I know what you're saying.
But he marketed.
Yeah,
he actually treated the whole thing like a business, which a lot of us are like, they'll either come see me or they won't, man.
I took that as an opportunity to go ahead and slander Dan Cook on the national radio show.
It's okay.
Yeah, because I find it contemptible. But I respect the fact that you can muster up enough self-esteem to detach yourself enough to say, I can sell this without saying, hey, you want to buy this? I hate it, but, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's what stifles you. It's like, I do a lot of things that I could sell, but I'm like, I don't really.
No, I know, but then you go to see a band and you buy everything they have.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, they have a hat.
Yeah.
Oh, they made a CD. I'm in. And they're psyched, too. They're like, dude, buy my hat. You're like, I will buy your hat. And you don't feel bad about that transaction. But as a self-loathing comedian, you're like, Lenny Bruce never sold a hat.
Yeah.
Lenny Bruce is dead.
Yeah,
he sells a record. records.
Yeah.
But he also went on Steve Allen's show and danced.
Yes, he did. Sure.
He knew how to do a soft shoe. He was a song and dance
and
man.
And he's a mimic early on, you know, before someone introduced him to sniffing glue and whatnot.
That was his big bit. That was a big bit about model glue on this that really broke him on the Steve Allen show.
Yeah.
Well, look, 866-303-2270. We'll take a couple of calls and then we'll have Greg for a few more minutes after we spend a few minutes away. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Join the Morning Sedition right now. Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Twenty-one past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey,
in studio here with us now, Greg Barrett, author of "He's Just Not That Into You," and the new book it's called "A Breakup Because It's Broken: The Smart Girl's Breakup Buddy." So you were just saying we got a couple calls. You know, I don't want to get off on another topic. Let's do these calls. 866-303-2270 is our number. Charles in Berkeley, up late. Do you have a question for Greg Barrett?
What's up, Charles?
Hey, how's it going?
Man, I'm pretty good, man. How you doing?
All right, I'm screwing around with some Photoshop 7, making some cool pictures.
Yeah.
Diving in, yeah. Getting dirty.
Sure.
Trying to clean up my 9x9 room here in downtown Berkeley.
And you're awake.
I'm awake.
Yeah, so you got a question for Greg?
Yes, I do. In the book, do you recommend any kind of, like, signature downtime from, like, a nasty relationship where you're just fed up?
I'm going to say no to that because it's more about a breakup. You know what I mean? Like going through a breakup. Like if you're in a relationship where it's nasty, you should get out of it. I mean,
right.
You know what I mean? Like if you're in a relationship, you're unhappy, and I'm not sure why you're in it. Are you?
I was. I still have the nasty residue of.
Oh, so you broke up with her.
I think he wants to know how much time does he need between relationships.
Oh, between relationships. I mean,
yeah,
it's, I'm sorry. I was confused with what you were saying. I thought you were in a relationship. Then you know what? I think it's directly proportional to how long it takes you to feel good about yourself, man. Like that's the rub. It feels bad until you make yourself feel better. So you got to find things that make yourself, you know.
Well, that's what he's doing. He's sitting there at Photoshop cutting her head off of
pictures. Yeah, I mean
pasting them on monsters. Wait, is that what you're doing, Charles?
Trying to swoon Randy Rhodes with my beautiful pictures or something like that.
Oh yeah, well go ahead and I think that's a great direction to go in.
Getting out of the house helps every once in a while. Get out of the house once or twice a day. You know what I mean?
Don't do it, Mary.
I think that you should send her.
I love you guys. You really edify my mornings.
Well, thanks, man.
In spite of all this talk about the end of the world. So.
That's all right. It doesn't end on the computer. You know.
Yes, it does, actually.
Charles.
With certain websites, it definitely ends, and my attention goes into this negative space of animal, you know what.
So. Yeah, sure. Well, I think what you should do is continue to make pictures, and please stalk Randy Rhodes. She invites that. Maybe she'll give you a... Yeah, stalk her, and maybe she'll give you a job, even.
Well, you know... The beautiful thing that made me fall in love with her is just that quick wit.
Yeah.
And then when people call in and say, "Oh, I love you, Randy," and she goes, "I love you more."
I'm you really jack.
Yeah. We're gonna have to like a hot fudge sundae.
Okay, right, man. We're gonna have to send your little phone call up to use as a promo for her. Thanks for calling, Charles.
Thanks, Charles.
He's obsessed. Barbie in New York, listening to WLIB. You have a question for Greg?
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, how are you?
We're good, man. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Oh, good. What's up? What's on your mind?
Well, after 5 years, I just got a phone call yesterday from my boyfriend who said that he was finally over me.
So this is 5 years since you broke up with him?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, it takes people. I mean, imagine carrying that around for 5 years. And how did you feel about that when he told you?
Well, I was I was fine. I mean, I feel, you know, I wish the best for him.
Right. You were fine. You were fine like 2 months before you broke up with him. Because, you know, people leave in the relationship and then they're gone, right?
Yeah.
And the thing that people don't understand about, like, when someone breaks up with you, they don't want to hear from you. Like, you know how, like, right. you want to call them? When your number comes up on their phone, they're like, ugh. Like, that's their thought. Like, the fact that you're calling someone and their actual thought is, like, as they're looking across at their new date, ugh. I'm, yikes. Yeah. Did I take this or do I let it go to voicemail? Because this is 35 voicemails.
Yes, exactly.
And you know what? The fact that he had to call you 5 years later to tell you that he's over you means he's still got another two.
Yeah.
I don't think he's over.
Yeah. That's what my friend said when I said, my best friend, I said, well, you know, I that's really nice of him. He apologized for being a jerk. And,
right.
And I said, you know, he said that he's finally over me. And she's like, no, he isn't.
Yeah, no. He'll call you a couple months ago. Okay, now I'm actually over you. Before, I was finally, but now I'm actually finally over you.
Right.
How'd you respond to that? I mean, what did you say when he said that? Was he crying? Did he just sort of like, I just wanted to let you know that, was he angry? Was he on your lawn?
No. I told him, what possessed you to call me after all this time? And he said, well, this is going to sound crazy. And he tells me he's over me, and I literally did a Homer. I went, don't!
Thanks and, we got to cut out, Barbie. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care, Barbie. Greg Barrett, best of luck with It's Called a Breakup because Thanks, it's man. Broken, the Smart Girls Breakup, buddy. I'll see you out on the coast when I come out there. Did you have fun?
It was awesome. It was great. Right. Your show's awesome.
Thanks for coming. It was great.
We are having Michael Imperioli is going to be on the phone. I see Brian from Everett is actually on the phone. If he has his song, you know, tell him to hold on. If he doesn't, I don't want to talk to him. So it's 27 past the hour. Greg Barrett, where are you going now? Back to San Francisco?
San Francisco, yeah, book signing.
Okay, coming up, Michael Imperioli on the phone and more stuff. I mean, it's Cliff Notes is coming up. It's a fun Tuesday. Is that all right with you people? 27 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. That music is preparing for our guest Michael Imperioli. We were talking to on the phone. I'm sure he's never heard that music being played before on a radio show that he's about to appear on. We'll also have the product placement minute in just a few minutes. But for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Good. Iraq rebuilding is slowing down because the U.S. is running out of money. The higher-than-expected cost of protecting workers against insurgent attacks has sent the cost of projects skyward. 25 cents of every reconstruction dollar now pays for security, plus the usual 25 cent per dollar tribute to Godfather Cheney. The U.S. Coalition Provisional Authority originally set a goal of employing 50,000 Iraqis on reconstruction projects. Unfortunately, that conflicted with their other goal of killing 50,000 Iraqis. The FBI may relax its drug use policy for new employees. The change would ease limits about how often and how many years ago job applicants can have used illegal drugs. And in memory of former FBI Chief J. Edgar Hoover, the Bureau will also relax the rules on how often male applicants could have worn a dress with a big fluffy black feather boa. That was a tongue twister, man. Wow. Current rules also ban anyone who used drugs such as cocaine or heroin within the last 10 years or more than five times. So that pretty much shuts out Liza Minnelli, the Bush clan, and anybody who lived through the 80s. A Chinese takeoff on American Idol called China Dream is the hottest new thing in the communist country. It's added incentive this year's winner of China Dream. As added incentive, this year's winner of China Dream also gets a sweep with Paula Abdul.
Ooh.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. Our next guest won an Emmy for his role as Christopher Moltisanti on HBO's series The Sopranos. He's involved along with the rest of the Sopranos cast in a charity baseball game this coming Saturday morning at Staten Island Yankee Stadium to raise money for the victims of Hurricane Katrina. Good morning, Michael Imperioli. How are you?
I'm very good. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's so great to hear you. I'm so happy on your show. You're on the show with us. So you got to hear this question all the time. What's going to happen in this season? Is it going to be the best ever or what?
Well, we're right in the middle of shooting the season.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What makes it different than the other ones, aside from that this is the last one and who knows what's going to happen?
I can't tell you that.
I know you can't tell me that, so, but is the feeling on the set that you guys must feel like family now?
Oh, yeah. We felt like family for a long time. But it's just, I mean, I don't know. The scripts are really amazing.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, what I've seen going down is you know, some great work. There's a real edge to it.
Yeah, are you worried that you're going to get that script, the one where it says, and here Christopher gets whacked?
Yeah, you know, you never know. And we get our scripts a couple of weeks in advance, and everybody kind of sweats it out. When someone reads the script, everyone else asks them, what happened in the script? Do I make it through the script?
How secret is it, though? Is there a possibility that you could be midway through a script, and all of a sudden that's it, and you don't even know about it?
I think anything's possible.
Right. So now there's going to be an 8-episode. There's going to be a bonus episode. How is this going to work now? What is the actual unfolding of this season?
Well, we're going to shoot. We shoot till the end of February. We're doing 12 episodes, which will be our 6th season, and then we're going to take off a couple of months, go back to work, and shoot 8 episodes, which will be our 7th season. It's because they're going to air. You know, this next season airs in March, the 6th season, and the 7th season will air in January of 2007, right? So we're March 2006 and then January 2007.
Wow, I'm confused.
it takes a lot of planning.
Michael Imperioli, you run an off-Broadway theater here in New York, Studio Dante. You've directed work there. Why theater? What attracts you to it?
I mean, it's just really exciting when the work we do happens live in front of an audience, you know, without the safety net of a second take, and to have that give and take and interplay between a live audience every time you do the piece. You know, theater, you do the piece every night from beginning to end. You know, in film and television, it's much more a disjointed way of performing it. And we also, you know, the goal of our theater is to develop, you know, and put up new plays. So that's very exciting to, like, you know, kind of initiate works that haven't been done and trying to find, you know, exciting, vibrant, vital new stuff and new ideas.
You're an amazing actor on screen and on television. I've talked to you. I've never seen you on stage, but I've heard nothing. Friends of mine, I think you're just amazing. We're talking to Michael Imperioli. The softball game is October 15th at Staten Island Yankee Stadium on Staten Island. All the stars of The Sopranos are scheduled to appear along with Spike Lee and football legend Lawrence Taylor. All proceeds to go to victims of Hurricane Katrina and Rita. For tickets, call 718-720-9265 or go to S1 Yanks. It's SI, Staten Island. Okay, SIYanks.com for information about the game. In terms of, like, I got to ask you this because my wife, Mishna, is a tremendous fan of yours, and she saw you in a Gary Wernick film where you played a crackhead.
That's right. That was, with Mira Sorvino.
What was that called?
Sweet Nothing.
And she's a huge fan of that movie, and she wanted me to ask you, do you like playing drug addicts and why?
I actually do like playing drug addicts, and I wind up getting cast as them kind of on a regular, semi-regular basis for some reason, unbeknownst to me. But I like playing it because they're on the, you know, they're desperate, on the edge characters, so the stakes are high, you know. Anytime the stakes are high, it's great for an actor. I mean, you know, I mean...
Sure, because it's unpredictable. You've got a certain amount of freedom, and you might get to places that you never even knew you had before.
Exactly. Usually it's dark, which is, you know, I always find the dark places a lot more interesting than the light places.
You don't got to tell me.
Now, you've also done some work on Law & Order. Any chance that that's going to be a regular thing for you?
Well, I did 4 episodes. Jesse Martin, who's the star of the show, he went off to do a movie, and I was on hiatus, so it kind of just fit in nicely. But I'm on The Sopranos for the next, you know, I'll be shooting till, you know, another year and 3 months. So after that, anything's possible.
You said that like Tony threatened you, that you couldn't even talk about other projects, so you get in trouble.
You know, we have a lot of things we can't talk about on The Sopranos. You know, it's not like any other TV show. We have our own codes and, you know, our own traditions.
Would it violate the code to tell us whether or not all of The Sopranos are going to play on the same team in this benefits softball game?
Oh, I think we'll all play on the same team. I don't think that's That would be a good idea to break us up.
So it would be all you guys against who? Spike Lee and Lawrence Taylor?
I think that's it, yeah.
It's all Staten Island. That's
no, you know what? I think for this game they may split us up. I think I don't think it'll be girls against boys either.
So I like the sort of cryptic code of The Sopranos. Do you actually have mafia guys on the set as advisors or in other capacities?
No. We absolutely do not.
That you can answer with some clarity.
There you go.
So yeah, it's a,
you know, they have no interest in coming to us. They have their own things that they got to do.
Well, you know, it's interesting though, because I remember, you know, The Godfather really elevated the visibility of the mafia in this country, and a lot of the guys started behaving. This is what I've read in relation to that movie. Have you gotten any input? I mean, have you been out at a club and someone pulled you aside and said you're doing it good, or you're doing it right?
I actually have it. I was at a restaurant. An Italian restaurant of all places, and a man came up to me who was pointed out by another friend of mine as someone who actually was, you know, of that world, and he said he liked what we did, but he said, I will show you the real way to garrote someone. You know, garrote is what they did to Luca Brasi, that strangulation kind of
thing. Oh, yeah.
And,
right behind the guy.
Yeah, he told me he would show me the real way that's done, and I kind of never got to find out, because he went away. He's going to be away for a long time, unfortunately. That's a true story.
And you were hoping that when he said he'll show it to you, that it was something that you were learning and not experiencing, I imagine.
I certainly did hope.
Yeah. So what do you got coming up at your theater, if you want to talk?
We have a new play that's up called Late Fragment, which is about a man who survives the collapse of the Twin Towers, and it's kind of his life in the aftermath of 9/11, you know, as a survivor. It's a new play, a really interesting play that I co-directed with a woman named Zetna Fuentes, and it's up right now. You could see it Wednesday through Saturday for the next couple of weeks. You could go to StudioDante.com or TicketCentral.com to get tickets.
All right, let me just plug this one more time. The softball game is October 15th at Staten Island Yankee Stadium on Staten Island. All the stars of The Sopranos are scheduled to appear, along with Spike Lee, football legend Lawrence Taylor. All proceeds go to victims of Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. For tickets, call 718-720-9265 or go to SIYanks.com. Michael Imperioli, great talking to you. Looking forward to the new season, and good luck with everything.
Thanks
Thank
a lot.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
Okay, you
take
care.
Thank you.
44 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We will have Product Placement Minute in just a minute, so hang out. We'll talk to you then.
This is Wayne Gilman, better known to the hard body mamas of the greater New York metropolitan area as Newsday. But I'm not busting a cap in some jive cat's ass for hogging the printer when I'm on deadline. I'm having a funky good time with Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Ooh, Newsday!
Well, look who's awake. Ready for another taste of Wayne?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Chris Wilson, the guy, the proprietor, web. Chris Wilson's attorney, we're going to be talking to Chris Wilson's lawyer. Chris Wilson, of course, is the proprietor and webmaster of Now That's FedUp.com, the site where they had the graphic photos of Iraqi war dead, and the pornography site that offered soldiers free membership into the site if they provided pictures from the war in Iraq. The military did not take any action against any of the soldiers. They claimed that the soldiers didn't send them, and they told the soldiers not to send them. But just coincidentally, within days or even a few weeks of all this hitting the fan, Chris Wilson gets busted on obscenity charges. One of a million pornographers in this country who runs websites, he gets busted. Does that sound fishy? Well, we're going to talk to his lawyer, Larry Walters, in just a few minutes. We got another call from the management at Air America Radio saying we have to make more money because we're saving up to buy the president of programming a printed 3x5 card that says president of programming. So now we present today's morning sedition product placement.
Usually Mark gets to try out the products in this segment, but he's graciously letting me do it this time.
That's right. So what news story did you pick for the segment?
Well, the presidential election in Poland, it turns out, it marks an historic shift. But I don't know what product we're plugging.
It's the Digestive Clinic of Hudson Valley. This is Dr. Carl Ginsberg, and he'll be giving you your colonoscopy.
Oh, a colonoscopy? Really? Hey, nice to meet you, Doc.
The pleasure's all mine. I'm a fan.
Great. Okay, good. Well, the historic thing about the election is it's the first time since the end of World War II that a communist candidate had basically zero chance of winning.
Mark, I'm just going to have you lie on your left side, if you would.
And, Doctor, what's that flexible lighted tube?
That is the colonoscope, and I'll be putting it into Mr. Merritt.
I gotcha.
Two candidates are in a runoff, and they're both, hey, all right. They're both, okay, a little uncomfortable. Former activists with the anti-communist solidarity movement.
All right, just lie still. I'm going to just blow a little air into the colon so we can see better, if you don't mind.
Hey.
So if both presidential candidates are from the solidarity movement, what's the difference between them?
Actually, it's kind of the same. It's kind of the same as in America. Pro-business, versus a social safety net. I don't know.
Interesting. And how does Mark's colon look, Doc?
I like what I see. I like it a lot.
About 36% of voters backed Donald Tusk, who wants to lower taxes and deregulate business. And around 33% went for Warsaw Mayor Lech Kaczynski, who wants to keep more of the old welfare state protections.
Sorry, Mark, but is that a tattoo in your colon?
I forgot I had an operation when I was 20 and I had them draw that.
It looks like a maple leaf with a skull in it.
I guess I was into heavy metal and hockey.
By the way, Mark, doesn't Kaczynski have an identical twin brother?
Yeah, and he's a chairman of the party that just won the paramilitary election. It's kind of like the Bush family.
And Doc? Is that a burrito?
Yeah, I think I pushed the colonoscope up a little too far.
Well, that's all for today's Morning Sedition Product Placement Minute.
Wow, man, I got into that.
Yeah.
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Kent Jones, for the lovely performance as Dr. Carl Ginsberg.
Sure.
It was just right on the money. So which story are we going to go from comedy to? Misoprostol, a.k.a. brand name Silotec, a.k.a. street name The Star Pill, is an ulcer medication that costs about $1 a pill that is being used as a cheap way to end pregnancies. An 800-milligram dose of the stuff for about 4 pills has a 60 to 90% chance of ending a pregnancy if taken within the first 7 weeks. Doctors have been using it legally in a pregnancy-terminating regimen along with RU486, but the street popularity is what is the concern, Riley, and is what is dangerous about that, because obviously the women who are resorting to the star pill are poor. Many of them are immigrants, minorities. It is well known and used in the Dominican community, and if it doesn't work, it can cause infection, bleeding, birth defects, and this is something we're going to be seeing. This is the modern version of the coat hanger, that if they continue to restrict abortion or disable people from access to abortions, this is what you're going to start seeing, is women taking their lives into their own hands in order to terminate a pregnancy.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you're talking now about women who, by and large, are not able to afford going to a clinic and getting it done legally now.
Right.
So you're talking, certainly, if abortion is curtailed on some level, or, for example, if younger children or teenagers get involved in a situation where they have to notify their parents, they may look at this as a viable alternative.
Yeah, and it's scary because, you know what's really scary is the New York State Right to Life Committee rep chose guilt in a statement responding to this, saying basically that these women might as well use Drano and they should be reminded that they could kill themselves and their baby. The Right to Life people never practically assess the situation. Nobody wants
an abortion. Nobody wants to get an abortion. If somebody is doing it, it's because they have to. They've made a choice to do that because of their life or because of something that's gone wrong or an accident. But they constantly resort to guilt and manipulation as opposed to legislating a situation where, you know, abortions can remain safe and legal and in the hands of doctors.
Yeah, and see, what they found here in New York in surveying the Dominican community in Upper Manhattan, a large and growing community, an immigrant community, 37% of the people they surveyed admitted some familiarity with it. If they admit familiarity with it, if something goes wrong and they get pregnant, they will use it.
Yeah, because it's out on the street.
Yeah.
I have to imagine. You know, it's not, I didn't see it in any of the stuff we read today that RU486 is available on the street. Everything is available on the street, but this stuff is cheap.
Yeah.
It takes four pills to make this happen. But if it doesn't happen, it can be just a horrendous
effect. Can be a mess, and there's no reason for it. It should be, you know, if people want to terminate a pregnancy, it should be available, it should be inexpensive, and people should have access, not just to the termination of pregnancy, but also, you know,
counseling.
Health counseling and that sort of thing
sure.
as well.
Sure. And speaking of abortion and the issue of abortion, nearly a half a century after he marched in the Columbus Day Parade as a kid, Antonin Scalia, Supreme Court Justice, led the parade of Fifth Avenue yesterday. He is the first Italian-American to serve on the Supreme Court. He marched in a brown suit with a white sash, and his wife followed him in a gold Lamborghini.
Didn't
she did. She did.
By the way, you know who went nowhere near the front of that parade yesterday?
Me.
Yeah, you. And Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City.
Really?
He wouldn't get near Scalia. He stayed more toward the middle of the parade.
And how about Kahlo? Did you see, you're Italian, right? Kahlo the Presto.
Oh, man, how stereotypical is this?
Did you go down the parade?
Yes, it was great.
Did you really?
No. I work. I'm sorry.
Oh, you work here?
But I was there in spirit.
You were?
Yes.
Go.
I had some pasta. It was great.
Did you have some pasta yesterday?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. So nice you, did, you didn't go to the parade. Did you, Kent? Did you go to the parade? You didn't go either?
No.
All right. So I guess we're not. I guess that's the end of that conversation. Wow, that was really good. So what do we got when we come back?
We got some guests.
We do. We got Larry Walters, Chris Wilson's lawyer, the guy from NowThat'sFedUp.com. We've got actor Michael York, and to top it all off, Mark Green.
At
the top of the hour, 57 past the hour, morning edition. Good morning. It's 6 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to the attorney for Christopher Wilson. Christopher Wilson, as you remember, we had on our show a couple of times. He is the webmaster and, I guess, proprietor of That's Effed Up, NowThat'sEffedUp.com, which, of course, is the website where many graphic photos of the Iraqi war dead were seen that were submitted by soldiers in Iraq in order to gain membership to the porn site. That was the deal that Christopher Wilson had made with them. Now, after the military found out, apparently they didn't take any action against any of the military other than saying that they shouldn't be sending pictures. But all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Chris Wilson gets busted for obscenity and about 300 misdemeanor accounts, if I'm recalling correctly.
Yes, true.
And he is now in jail, and we are going to talk to his lawyer because the hypocrisy of this is that why him out of the millions of pornographers that now exist in this country because of the Internet, not knocking the pornographers necessarily, but why him? It seems incredibly suspect to me. It seems that the Pentagon sicked the federal government. It would be, no, the state government on Chris Wilson vis-a-vis the sheriff in Polk County and took him in. And Chris Wilson, I didn't realize until the other day, is also an ex-police officer.
Yeah.
It's just very curious to me, and we sought this guy out. I want to talk to him about you know, how much he thinks the military had to do with this, whether the Pentagon tipped him to it. Moving on, our producer, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, I've never seen him get more excited about something in my life. That's ridiculous because he's constantly in a state of excitement. But for some reason, he's wandering through the papers in Chicago. He's looking at the newspapers and he's like, Dude, you gotta read this. You gotta read this, this obituary. Dan, why don't you read it? Because I've been hearing about it for 2 days. You don't have it now? Come on. Why don't you come on in here and read the obituary that made you so excited? Riley, I'm telling you, for 2 days, Dan just thought that this was the greatest obituary ever written. Get on a mic, Dan, because I know you enjoy this so much. And I think it's funny too, but I think that you're excited about it. Why don't you do it? All right.
I am excited about it. I mean, this is the way I want to go out, Mark.
Okay.
Right. Now, I want to know, this is a real obituary.
Okay.
From
yesterday's
Chicago Tribune.
Okay. more into music. Yeah.
Theodore Roosevelt Heller. Theodore Roosevelt Heller, 88, loving father of Charles Heller, dear brother of the late Sonia Steinberg. Ted, as he was known, was discharged from the U.S. Army during World War II due to service-related injuries, and then forced his way back into the Illinois National Guard, insisting no one tells him when to serve his country.
You like the spirit.
Yeah.
Graveside services Tuesday at 11 a.m. at Waldheim Jewish Cemetery, 1700 South Harlem Ave, Chicago. In lieu of flowers, please send acerbic letters to Republicans.
Yeah, we like the old fighting Jewish spirit.
Yeah. Seriously.
That's what we got. And also, I don't want to leave people out. You know, it's every time, it's so weird. There's like one or two people in our audience, Dan, that anytime I mention Jews, they're like, what about the Christians? How can we talk about the Jews? Why is the CEO's name Goldberg? You know, how clear does it have to be? You guys are running everything.
There's a Jewish conspiracy going on here.
That's right. You're fired.
I'm converting, man.
Okay. You're back in. I'm like the last guy. You know, I was brought up with it, but I'm so. I mean, I haven't practiced. Listen to me. I haven't practiced Yom Kippur in years. I have not fasted, and you just did a class in suckling pig roasting on Friday.
I have fasted twice in my life, but we eat pig in the Passion family.
Oh, okay.
You remember going to synagogue when you were a kid? You go on Yom Kippur, and you sit there. And it's like, oh no, it's the rabbi's sermon. Let's get out of here. And you go out and smoke cigarettes with your friends. Oh, that was me.
I actually had a time when I was talking to the cantor of my temple with my parents were there too, and she was saying, what's your favorite food? And I just answered honestly without thinking. I said, mooshu pork. Yeah. And she gives this disapproving look, and she goes, I prefer mooshu chicken.
Yeah. Oh, see the condescension.
But I ran into that cantor a couple weeks ago for the first time in 10 years.
And he had pork hanging out of his mouth. Yeah.
She said she remembered that.
Munching on a chop.
She eats pork now too.
She does?
She gave up the kosher thing.
My brother was interesting. My brother was kosher, yet did not go to services. What the hell is that?
My fiance is similar to that. She goes to services sometimes.
Yeah, but what is that? What's the point of that? I mean, why go through all the aggravation? Two plates, two knives, two sinks, whatever the hell you're going to do, and not even go through the rest of the show. Rigmarole.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
This sounds complicated. Sounds complicated like the Catholics and the fish thing.
Let's talk to, let's get Larry Walters on the phone before it gets too late here. I'm glad we're having these conversations. Man, this is just chaos here.
Yeah.
So as you know, as I just explained to you, this is Chris Wilson's work. Chris Wilson is in jail on like 300 misdemeanor counts, an obscenity charge, and we think that the military was behind it. Our guest now on the phone is Larry Walters. He is the attorney for Chris Wilson. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So we talked to Chris a couple of times here, and what's the current status of the case down there?
Well, you know, he sits in jail for having posted these images in the United States of America, and everybody's trying to get him out the best we can, but they've made it awfully difficult because they've charged him 300 separate times, and that requires the posting of 300 separate bonds. Very logistically difficult for bondsmen to do that, and quite expensive, I'd also mention. And so the current focus is trying to get him out and take these guys on and defend the charges.
Now, Larry Walters, is the sheriff here, Grady Judd, I believe his name is, is he known as an anti-porn crusader? I mean, does he do this often? Is this the first big porn bust for him?
Oh, absolutely not. Let me tell you, Polk County is right in between Orlando and Tampa. And Orlando and Tampa are fairly normal communities, a healthy dose of adult entertainment and video stores and men's cabarets and so forth. Polk County has nothing. All of the adult entertainment, all of the video stores has been driven out. People have been threatened with prosecution if they dare sell adult videotapes in that county. All the clubs have been closed down. A couple of other websites have been prosecuted. I've been fighting with them for 15 years over First Amendment issues, but censorship is rampant in that community.
Now, I looked this up. There are about 42 different hotels and motels in Polk County. Do any of them show adult material on demand?
Well, I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do.
Is the sheriff going after them?
Nope. They are continuing to distribute that material, and you know, for whatever reason, that hasn't caught the ear of the sheriff, and neither have the many other adult webmasters in town. But you know, oddly enough, as soon as this case gets some publicity about the War Dead photo, Chris Wilson finds himself in jail.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, because Chris, you know, he had offered American military soldiers over there in Iraq free membership to the site in exchange for images of the war. Now, I saw some of the images.
It wasn't really images of the war. What he asked for was proof that they are serving in the military, because they couldn't sign up on their own. Their credit cards were being rejected because it was coming from Iraq. And so he wanted to do something for the soldiers. He said, just show me that you're serving out there, and we'll give you a free membership. And so a lot of these pictures were just, you know, pictures of them in the barracks or walking down the street.
Yeah, I saw that. You know, and I think that, you know, for whatever reason, it caught on. There were a lot of pictures up there. I found it a tremendous service, and just in terms of seeing what the war looked like on that level, even if it was from the point of view of American soldiers, and even if it was, you know, with certain, you know, fairly disgusting captions on it, I thought it was a very interesting thing. Now, clearly the military found out about this. When we talked to Chris the first time, he had not heard from anybody. He wasn't getting any real press at all in this country. And then within 2 weeks, all of a sudden, the military reprimands the soldiers, denies that soldiers sent them sent him any pictures, and now he's in jail. It has to be connected, right?
Oh, I'm sure there's no connection at all.
All right.
Do you think I want to end up in jail?
No, I don't. But I do want to know if you've heard anything. Has the military been in contact with the Polk County Sheriff?
Well, you know, look at it this way: the sheriff, on the one hand, says there's absolutely no connection, and this is independent, and we're just investigating, and et cetera. And in the same breath, he says we're sharing information with the military. You tell me.
Interesting point, Larry. You've done these kinds of cases before. You're one of the most prominent First Amendment lawyers in Florida. I mean, isn't this more or less a nuisance a bust that we're looking at here with Chris Wilson?
Well, you know, we hope to quickly dispatch the case, and if we can get in front of a judge that understands First Amendment law, that understands the protections that are given to this kind of material, you know, we hope that that we can get rid of it quickly. But I would say that, you know, there is some difficulty in finding those judges and those courts on occasion. Sometimes there's politics that influence the decisions that are made, unfortunately. I've had pretty good luck with the courts in Polk County, I would have to say, in these previous cases, and they've generally done the right thing. So we're hopeful that the judge that gets this case, you know, sees it for what it is, a pathetic censorship attempt at retaliation against him for posting images that somebody doesn't like, and dismisses the case. But in the meantime, you know, Chris Wilson has already paid the price for speaking out in America. He has, you know, been arrested. He has been dragged into the jail. He hasn't had a cigarette in 3 days. You know, he's already, he hasn't been convicted of anything, yet he's being punished.
Now, if he is convicted on all charges, worst case scenario, how much time would he be facing?
Well, I guess if you calculate it, and 300 misdemeanors, each of which is a year in jail, if they run them consecutively, over 300 years in jail.
Well, that's a long time to go without cigarettes.
I tell you.
But you can get cigarettes in jail. But I don't want him to go to jail, obviously. And what I want to know is, are you concerned in terms of finding a judge that will hear this case, that is able to hear it in the way that you want, because of the federal government's sort of interest in this case, that it's going to be difficult to find that judge?
It's theoretically possible that that influence could be brought to bear. I would hate to think that would ever happen in the judiciary. And I have faith and trust in the courts in the United States and the state of Florida. But it's of some concern that there is this kind of looming federal government cloud over this case. And we're going to be investigating to the extent to which the government was involved or the military was involved. We're going to sit people down for deposition. We're going to find out what the source of the complaints were and why he was singled out for prosecution. And, you know, once you give me some subpoena power,
right,
we're going to find out what happened.
Well, that's good. Let's just make it clear that on this site, on now that's effedup.com, there was no pornographic content that was any different than millions of other sites in this country. The only real difference was with these postings from the soldiers.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. That's the only thing that distinguishes this site.
And that's what makes it sort of intriguing, and I'm glad you're working on it, Larry. Thanks for talking to us.
No problem.
Thanks a lot.
We'll be back in just when we come back, we are going to be talking to soon in a few minutes actor Michael York. He's one of those guys like, oh yeah, that guy. He's been in Logan's Run. He was in a Cabaret. He
Austin
was on
Powers.
Austin Powers the last season. Well, he's got a new book out about shooting a new film in Russia. It's very funny. He's a good storyteller. Looking forward to talking to him. So hang out. It's 18 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Now, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Little Zeppelin for you. It's 23 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Hang out for Michael York. Man, this guy's been in like a million movies. And you know who's coming up later? Mark Green! Are you ready to rock?
There you go.
Mark Green coming up at the end of the show to top it off, so to speak. Yes, the big closer. Here we go. All right. What are we talking about now, Riley? 27 Republican senators, almost half of Bush's party, have publicly expressed doubts about Harriet Myers. It is now the Republicans we're talking about a thorough nomination process. That's a complete turnaround. I mean, usually they're the ones, let's just get them through. Let's just make this happen. I hope those Democrats don't mire us in questions and needing of memos and documents that might indicate that this person had some history. Now all of a sudden they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Slow it up. Let's have a look at this person. She doesn't seem to have any paper trail whatsoever, and we can't be sure that she's going to deny people their rights like we want them to.
Well, you know, I get a feeling, read some of the media across the country, that they are pretty sure that Harriet Myers, if she ends up on the court, if she's confirmed, will vote to overturn Roe v. Wade. Now, this is also the subject of all the speculation surrounding James Dobson, the head of Focus on the Family, because he supposedly received some assurances, which he won't share with anyone, about Harriet Myers that led him to be, unique among conservatives to endorse the woman.
Right. Well, he sat down with some White House advisors, including Karl Rove, and they somehow reassured him. But our own Specter, who is the head of the Judiciary Committee, who is going to be questioning Harriet Myers, he said, we're going to get to the bottom of that. If there are backdoor deals, backroom deals being made, I want to find out why. Because if she's telling anybody what her views are, how she might rule on issues of privacy and issues of abortion, then the American people should know that she's disclosing that information somewhere. And if she's going to hold it back during the nomination process, she's being disingenuous. And on top of that, completely qualified for this job in any way.
Well, you know, I was nervous about Harriet Myers from the beginning when I read the quote that she thought George W. Bush was the most brilliant man she'd ever met.
It's clear to me that they are enamored with each other. I don't know. They have a pretty long history. She clearly has secrets, no secrets about George Bush. She definitely babysat his darkest secrets in order to make him a more viable political candidate. But it seems to me that the admiration has to be pretty damn deep to rise to this level of cronyism for him to take this shot and to nominate her, even if it doesn't go through, which it probably won't. The interesting thing to me, Riley, is what are the chances are? Okay, let's say that the Republicans vote her down and the Democrats vote her down, and then there's the threat of filibuster if they nominate too radical a judge for the nomination after Harry Meyer. So is there a chance that we might get a moderate, which is the best we could hope for, if Harriet Myers does indeed not make the cut?
I think, and again, you know, we're looking now at what is in the best political interest of the Bush administration. That's what we're looking at, because this guy acts politically. He doesn't govern at all, but he acts very politically. So then you got to look and see, is he prepared for a long and tough and divisive fight over someone more conservative than Harriet Myers? Yeah. I think Harriet Myers was probably his third way. Somebody that's not, that he felt, he was close to, but didn't have that kind of judicial paper behind her that some other nominees had that the Democrats would go after. What he did not count on, and I don't think anybody counted on this, was the fury of the religious right on this thing.
Yeah, well, it's, they are more concerned than everyone should be concerned, because, as you know, the Supreme Court, these people could be on there for a long time, but they are just, they wanted somebody that would deny everybody their rights and help move this towards a theocracy, and they just don't believe that she's got the juice.
There you go. No chops. Right.
So we'll be talking to Michael York coming up shortly, so why don't you hang out for that? Yeah, he's an interesting storyteller, and he's been around forever. I mean, he's been in every movie ever. It's 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. You know, stay tuned, folks. Candidate for New York State Attorney General Mark Green will be closing the show. So hang on to your seats and get ready for a wild ride. Right now. Our next guest, starred in films as diverse as Romeo and Juliet, Cabaret, Austin Powers, Logan's Run. Yes, he's written a book called Are My Blinkers Showing? Adventures in Filmmaking in the New Russia. Please welcome actor Michael York. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mark and Mark.
It's nice to see you. I really, not only do I remember you from, you have one of those faces that is a fixture in my head from childhood. For some reason, I remember you. You have a very defined, definitive presence, and I remember you from movies. I saw Cabaret way too young.
Oh, I apologize. How do you mean? How can it be too young?
I mean, what year did that come out?
It came out in the early 70s.
So 1972. So if I went to see it with my parents in 1972, that would have mean I was around 9. And that's it's a little heavy to see the dead dog and the Juden. You know, it's a little rough for 9, especially as a Jew. It was a little difficult.
Well, how about the young Nazi singing the anthem in the beer garden?
Oh, that
you
was
must have identified with that as a young kid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I said, boy, Mom, I want to be a Nazi. And then they took me to Scholl and said, bad. But you've done great work on Larry's show too, on Larry David's show. I thought that was very funny.
Well, that's fun because as you know, it's unscripted. You just show up and then make it up as you go along.
Is that true? Is that how that works?
Yeah. I mean, there's certain points that they want to make, you know, get the show from there to there,
right.
And you're on your own.
Oh, that's
good luck.
I knew they improvised, and I have some friends that have been on about it. I guess I've never talked to them about it. I didn't know it was that loose. So you just basically play yourself.
Yeah.
And you kind of played up against him. And I guess the trick is to make sure that, you have friction with Larry.
Well, I found myself being very aggressive. I've hardly met Larry before, but I was very aggressive with him. I don't know why.
It was very funny. It was very funny. So tell me about the new book is all about your experience in shooting a Russian thriller in Russia.
Yeah. You know, I have to confess that I'm seduced by location I write. The thought of going anywhere in the world, you know, especially somewhere very interesting to make a movie is a big turn on. And this was an invitation in the summer of 2003 to go to Moscow to shoot this film on location in Moscow. Russian movie, but made in English with half American cast, half Russian, half, you know, it was a half and half of everything.
Right.
And that, I just thought this would be really interesting, as it was, you know, to be a fly on the wall this time when Russia is going through these enormous changes, making these transitions. And, you know, because you can go there as a tourist and you stay in your first class hotel and you've in your limousine and so on. You see certain things, of course, but when you're working with the people, when they're unburdening to you and you hear about their lives, you do get a sort of a deeper insight.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was the first thing that struck you when you got there that made you say to yourself, gee, I guess I'm not in L.A.?
Well, you know, I've been going since the early 70s to Moscow, at the height of communism, and what struck me was just how gorgeous Moscow is looking at the moment. I mean, it's extraordinary. You have to, you know, you rub your eyes.
Really?
For example, the old gum store. Do you remember the one on Red Square that you saw in the background of every military parade on May Day? But it used to be full of, you know, horrible Soviet fashions. It now has every great designer, Western designer.
Really?
Armani sells more beaded dresses in Moscow than anywhere else in the world. So you're constantly being brought up and saying, my God, you know. But there are...
So finally, Moscow has become a high-end mall.
Oh, yes. You bet it is. It's expensive. But at the other end, there are these huge disparities. You see these pensioners on Red Square in the heart of Moscow selling little things to get by because their pensions that meant something under the old system mean, you know.
So this is what capitalism looks like in Russia.
Yeah.
Basically. But the framework of the city is all in place. You're just saying that there's a new sort of vibrance to it because of the availability of all these different things from all around the world.
Well, I mean, they're capitalists now, but, they're as their own version of capitalism. And also, you know, we're asking a lot. You don't change on a dime. These great changes were so recent, and, you know, they have to find their way. But it's a most fascinating place. And, you know, the movie is actually coming out next month.
Only released in Russia?
Released by Universal.
And, what's it called?
Moscow Heat. And okay. I must say, Universal being very kind, they put a little slip about in every DVD package saying, go read the book.
Oh, your book?
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's fantastic.
It's called cross-promotion, I think.
Absolutely. Synergy.
Now, who gets the credit for the changes? Assuming that most people living in Moscow believe they're positive changes, who gets the credit for it?
I mean, you have to go to the top, Mr. Putin, of course, controversial.
Because he's viewed here as some kind of a brute or something. He allegedly stole that guy's Super Bowl ring, for God's sake.
Yes, I know. But, you know, I think after the Yeltsin years, the sort of chaotic time, they have firm government. Now, they may have, there are certain question marks and, you know, people are a little worried about what's happening to the media is being controlled. But then I think back, hey, what's happening here? You know, we have a bunch of American oligarchs who are controlling our media, you know, and I keep making this sort of balance as I do in the book.
Let's talk about the differences between, like, you know, making a film there and making a film here and what the film was about. I mean, I imagine you've made, like, 100, you know, many movies.
Incalculable.
I thought I knew most of your movies, and I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah. There are movies that I imagine if I was to embarrass you and quiz you on the names of characters in some of these, you probably wouldn't be able to get them.
Not at all, no. I like to keep busy. I mean, there are other actors who just choose on the theory that nobody knows anything, so you don't know what's going to work. You know, you might get a little Blair Witch and the big studio picture with all the budgets and so on goes.
Why not do it? You know, Michael Caine's the same way. You know, he seems to do everything as well. Hey?
Yeah.
So now you go to Russia, you're used to making American films or British films. What was the first thing that made you go, how come?
Well, they do have a different way of doing things. Uh-huh. Like, for example, the cameraman.
Yeah.
They have one magazine on the camera, and when that magazine is finished, you know, which happens fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Even if you're in the middle of the most important shot and everyone's, you know, ready to continue, he would take off this one magazine. He would go to his little bag. He would change the film. He would come back. While we sat around watching him do this, and he would put it back on. And we said, "Listen, you know, this is a reasonably small budget film, but we have enough money in the budget. You can have 2, 3, 4 magazines. And what you do is, you know, when one magazine runs out, you just pop on another one. We carry on seamlessly. Niet." Why not? This is not Russian way of doing things. So we were up against that, and you know, we learned a lot from them, and I think they learned a lot from us. And you know, it was like Rodney King said, you know, have to learn to get along.
And what about your co-star? Who was that? I mean, and what is
Alexander Nevsky?
Alexander Nevsky, yes, a name not to be taken lightly. Alexander is the sort of, he prides himself on calling himself the Russian, you know, Schwarzenegger.
Uh-huh.
He's a huge guy,
yeah,
a bodybuilder, but very intelligent, like Arnold. You know, he's got all these degrees and so on, and you know, he was the co-star. But he said, you know, this film, there's a big difference. You know, I'm so fed up with all the Russian stereotypes that are portrayed in Hollywood movies. We're always the bad guys, the mafia, the, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So unprecedentedly, you know, I'm an action hero who is a good guy, a cop. I'm Russian.
Okay.
A good cop.
You're a good Russian cop?
No,
he was.
No, I was a diplomat.
Oh, okay, all right.
Who goes to Russia? His son has been murdered in the course of pursuing a police investigation. He goes to find out, to find the killer. So it's a sort of fish out of water story.
Got it.
Now, do Russian films have the union problems that sometimes American films run into? Are the camera people and those sorts of folks, do they belong to a union? Is there such a concept?
I suppose they do, but there wasn't much evidence of it. We would find ourselves working till 3 in the morning because it was so disorganized. And I would say, I said to my leading lady, God, sure you all want to go home, and she'd say, with a mixture of resignation and that sort of stoic Russian acceptance of things, that this is how we do things. I'm sure things will change. And, I'm sure that, you mentioned Russian movies, but the whole system sort of collapsed when communism collapsed and the source of the funding was removed.
I noticed that there was a shortage of Russian blockbusters coming down the pipe.
But now, in the last few years, they've started making Russian movies and the Russians are going to see it. So there's a whole revival of Russian home box office, and they're building wonderful movie houses, and it's all
it's all happening. Capitalism is they have the Cineplex, they have the malls, they're going to have it all. They'll have Starbucks soon.
Exactly.
Is there Starbucks up there?
Of course.
There is?
Yay, capitalism, as Austin Powers said.
I'm so limited. I'd like to go. I'd like to visit Russia. I have roots in Russia. Now, I heard that when you got to Russia that there was an issue with your cell phone. Is that true?
Everyone's on a cell phone there. And they have fantastic cell phones.
Yeah.
You can use them in the subways.
Okay.
They make ours look like pathetic,
Okay. Wow. So you felt small and backward with your American cell phone?
Of course.
What else do they have that's better than ours?
When you
get there, you're having dinner or something like that, or just out in the world, you're like, oh my, this is terrific.
Well, I think just the difference.
Yeah,
the fact that it is, that it's Russia. And as you say, there are so many, people in this country who have their roots there.
Yeah.
But even flying there, I remember I flew from L.A. direct on Aeroflot.
Uh-huh.
Now, for example, you remember the reputation of Aeroflot, that it was your last option.
Yeah.
This was a luxurious Boeing 767, wonderful sleeper beds.
That's huge.
Yeah, this is the new Russia. This is how they do it, and they're doing it well,
Well, the book is called Are My Blinkers Showing? Adventures in Filmmaking in the New Russia. Michael York has been our guest. It was great seeing you. Are you going to do any more shows with Larry or no? What do you got coming up?
Well, if he asked me, I would rush to be there. Absolutely.
Okay. Yes. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
46 past the hour. We'll be back with Mark Green after this on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Yeah. Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
We're going to land this thing. 50 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
Third America Radio's Morning Sedition. Our guest is a Democratic candidate for New York State Attorney General. He's campaigning with Democratic mayoral challenger Fernando Ferrer. He is the co-author of the book on Bush, How George W. Misleads America. Good morning, Mark Green.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
We're going to land this thing. I hope I'm not the front wheel of a JetBlue plane.
No.
Eddie opens with a joke, folks.
Sorry.
It's beautiful.
It's good.
No, I'm happy to see you. So let's talk about this terrorist threat. He's getting a lot of flack. Bloomberg's getting flack from your boy, Fernando Ferrer, about maybe jumping the gun. What do you think?
If any of the three of us were mayor, we probably would have done what Bloomberg did on the merits. That is, if the FBI tells you there's a credible threat, a cell in the Middle East, which said that they told New York, a cell in Brooklyn, to bomb the subways, and then the Brooklyn cell dispersed, you'd be worried, and you'd probably err on the side of saying something rather than not saying something. Having said that, I am so convinced that George W. Bush I kept raising terror alerts while Kerry was at the convention, while Kerry was having a debate.
Yep.
As Kerry was taking off, hey, this hasn't been a terror alert federally since November of 04. I wonder why.
Yeah.
So it's fair to be suspect, especially of someone who has squandered our trust, George W. Bush. But at the moment, you probably have to assume that Bloomberg erred on the side of being safe rather than sorry.
So why did Ferrer call him on it?
Well, if any of the one of us were a Ferrer and you're trailing and there's a legitimate issue of whether he played Chicken Little, whether Bloomberg played Chicken Little, you raise the question. And now you try to throw the burden onto Bloomberg to answer why he did what he did, said what he said, when he did.
But is it legitimate to say that there's a question about that?
Yes. Okay. It's legitimate to raise a question because it's a little embarrassing. It's like the gang that couldn't shoot straight. If anything, you want the federal and city authorities to get it right on terrorism. And here, Homeland Security and the FBI and the NYPD all were disagreeing with each other. That's not very comforting.
Now, I got to ask you, there was a dinner, fundraising dinner for Fernando Ferrer here in New York yesterday, in Chelsea. Last night, the DNC chair, Howard Dean, was there. Were you there?
No. By the way, I don't think it was a big dinner, Mark. I think it was like 30, 40 people. But I am for Ferrer, and we'll try to help him.
But don't want to eat with him?
But I don't want to jinx him. Given my track record on this stuff, man.
But wait a minute. Now, there's a question, and now they're saying this is yet another Ferrer gaffe, as to whether or not Howard Dean was actually the host of this little fundraising gathering, because apparently he's not supposed to do that sort of thing. Is this another instance of people jumping wrongly all over Freddie Ferrer?
Yes, it is. You know, like you said, why weren't you at the dinner? Well, I walked in with the nominee Ferrer to the Apollo with Reverend Sharpton and others just to show United Democratic Front last Thursday night. And, of course, Mayor Bloomberg wasn't there. He blew off the Apollo and the debate and probably stubbed his toe in the process. What happens is, and I've been on both sides of this, Mark, when you're ahead, the press thinks you're going to win, and suddenly any small mistake, and we all make them every day, except you guys,
oh yeah,
is ignored. When you're behind, and suddenly it rains on your press conference. And another metaphor for the failure of this campaign, it's been raining and water sogged. So whether Howard Dean is listed as the host or a guest, of course, has no consequence. But people play it up. This election is going to turn on whether the public is ready to fire the incumbent, Michael Bloomberg, because the challenger can do better. At the moment, that's a big burden for a challenger, and Ferrer has not yet carried it.
Mm-hmm.
But with 4 weeks to go, and if Bloomberg makes another mistake like the Apollo, it'll really close.
But now, do national figures make a difference in New York when they campaign with somebody like Freddie Ferrer? Will Hillary Clinton make a difference? Will Chuck Schumer make a difference? Would Howard Dean make a difference?
Not much. I'm of the belief, with very few exceptions, I'll give you the biggest one in American history in a second, endorsements don't matter. Now, as we say in Yiddish, like chicken soup, it can't hoit. And so you want as many as you can get. But basically, when you're dealing, Mark R., with a race where the voters know a lot about both candidates, president, governor, mayor, an endorsement doesn't really add much to the pool of knowledge. If you're dealing with a lower-level race, sheriff, city council, Congress, a big endorsement can fill in the blanks. The biggest exception to my rule, unfortunately it affected me, is Rudy Giuliani was sinking in the polls September 10th, 2001, and of course went from Nixon to Churchill September 12th of 2001.
Sure.
His endorsement of Michael Bloomberg, said media guru David Garth, who was working for Bloomberg 4 years ago, was worth 16 net points, said Bloomberg's own media advisor. So Howard Dean, who I enormously admire, he was right about the Iraq War, and all the other Democrats were wrong. Much as I admire him, he helps. But this is Ferrer's to win or lose.
All right. Mark Green, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Candidate for New York State Attorney General. Talk to you again soon.
Good to see you.
Hang out for a minute. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Iraq rebuilding is slowing down because the U.S. is running out of money. Iraqis say they can build for less than we can since they don't have to pay for vacation homes for Halliburton executives. The U.S. Coalition Provisional Authority originally set a goal of employing 50,000 Iraqis on reconstruction
construction projects. Unfortunately, that conflicted with their goal of killing 50,000 Iraqis. The FBI may relax its drug use policy for new employees. The change would ease limits about how often and how long ago applicants can have used illegal drugs. And in memory of former FBI Chief J. Edgar Hoover, the Bureau will also relax the rules on how often male applicants could have worn a dress with a big fluffy black feather boa. A Chinese takeoff on American Idol called China Dream is the hottest new thing in the communist country. As added incentive, this year's winner of China Dream also gets to sleep with Paula Abdul. Phrase of the day, 30,000 people are feared dead in Pakistan, but Bush has already contacted Pakistani officials and offered to blame the mayor of New Orleans. Wake up, sheeple. This could be an opportunity. If we want Pakistan to cooperate with us in the war on terror, we should threaten to send them aid through FEMA.
All right.
All right.
Tomorrow, Mark Maron, we've got the legendary Stud Circle with us and the 1,000 greatest recipes in the world. This is Air America Radio.